Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jones! Bowden! He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. The first test is done. England-Ireland, of course, an absolutely emphatic victory for England. They had to actually bat again, as you probably will have known. Ireland forcing England to come out the openers and knock off 12 to win. And actually, Ireland did themselves a lot of credit today with 362 all out, really surviving the first two sessions of the day and actually putting together a couple of really good partnerships for lower down the order in particular. Which I guess, in a way, Simon, sort of in a way, just posed a few little questions to England with the way they batted out, 80-odd overs, 86 overs they survived in the end, and at times made the England bowling attack look a bit toothless. I suppose, you know, Ben Stokes talked positively afterwards, saying it was a good workout for the bowlers and also Johnny Bairstow behind the stumps. But I would be slightly worried if England were playing on a pitch like that with that attack against Australia.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, England talked about playing on flat pitches, haven't they? That's what Ben Stokes said. You know, we want to play on flat pitches, perhaps with a bit more pace in them, and Lords didn't have that much pace. But this was a flat pitch. Quite unusual for Lords of late, actually. We haven't seen that many surfaces like this at Lords in recent years. They tend to be quite quick test matches with the bowlers dominating and overhead conditions coming into play. But yeah, how do England get wickets on flat pitches? And it's not going to be easy for them. They're going to play a different attack, you'd imagine, when it comes round to the Ashes, the first test match at Edgbaston and probably Lords as well. But there's going to be a bit of mixing and matching. So perhaps some of the bowlers that played in this game are going to be playing in the next Lords test match. And Ben Stokes in his post-match interview on television saying, well, you know, it's given us a bit of insight into what we need to do if we come back and it's flat at Lords in late June. Jack Leach got a bit of tap, didn't he? Josh Chung, really impressive, I thought, in the second innings. You know, ran in, full of heart, you know, was prepared to bang it in and rewarded with his five wickets. Stuart Broad, five wickets in the first innings. Matthew Potts, perhaps not his best game, but, you know, he's willing, isn't he? He'll run in for you as well. But it's not going to be easy. I mean, you know, you're talking about Adair and McBride putting together 163. You do slightly wonder what it's going to be like when it's Labuschagne and Smith. You know, they don't like partnerships of 163. They'll want to bat for 2 days and score 363 together. Anyway, you know, those are some of the issues going forward for England.
Yeah. Although I have the highest admiration for Jack Leach, I worry about him because Australia have got a lot of left-handers. And in a way, you know, do you play a left-arm spinner because you've got left-handed batters because you can aim into the rough? Well, that all depends if there's any rough to aim at. And the game needs to have, you know, 3 or 4 days under its belt, really, to have any decent rough for a left-arm spinner to work with. but assuming that you've got, you know, right arm over bowlers predominantly, and actually on a flat pitch, the left armers like the left handers rather like the left arm spinners, and the Aussies have got quite a few left handers, so you know you potentially their opening pair will be left handed, and several in the middle order as well. So you know, I worry about Jack Leach. People say he's improved, and obviously he's worked incredibly hard at his bowling. It just lacks, to me, real spinner's guile. I keep listening to Phil Tufnell on commentary, hoping in a way he might just shed a bit of light on what is the art of spin guile. You know, how do you lure that batter out of his crease with that bit of drop and extra bit of bite on the ball, or just the flight and the clever, you know, way of having a ball on a string, which he did actually. I mean, he wasn't as consistent probably as Leach, but he did have the ability to lure a batter out of his crease and cause a mishit. And it's that sort of, I'm looking for that little bit of deception from Leach, which I don't really see. So it worries me. And if England are playing a four-man attack, which they may have to if Stokes isn't able to bowl, I worry about playing Leach as one of those four men against Australia.
Yeah, if Ben Stokes can't bowl or can't bowl very much. I mean, he did say in his post-match interviews today, he categorically said, you know, nothing to worry about. Asked whether he was going to be bowling at Edgbaston, he said, yes, definitely. Asked whether he was going to bowl in this game, if there's any chance he was going to bowl in this game, he said, no, I haven't really been, you know, haven't been bowling. And he did bowl before today's play out in the middle, you know, a few sort of gentle looseners and swung the ball with a new ball on a green surface. That's what he said. But, you know, he wasn't ready to bowl. And the other point is he hasn't bowled very much at all. You know, and the Edgbaston Test match is not too far away. You do sort of need to, I know he's very fit and physically fit, and you do need to have your body in the condition to bowl. So there's one thing about being able to bowl, but of course the other thing is about being able to bowl well, you know, and having, you know, being in rhythm and, you know, being able to do the job with the ball, as well as actually physically standing at the top of your mark and running into bowl.
The thing about knee injuries, and I've said this before, is that they are very temperamental. And I know exactly what he's experiencing, because if you have a catch, you take a catch like he took today, and you slightly lose your balance and your leg, your knee goes inverted slightly, almost hyperextended, you suffer a lot of pain because it is sore all around. I mean, basically what happens in a knee joint is you've got the patella, the kneecap, which slides over the top. If you're a young person or a fit person, the kneecap slides beautifully over the top of the joint. And if you're an older person or a person with wear and tear in your knee, that kneecap doesn't slide nearly as smoothly, because the cartilage in between the kneecap, the underside of the kneecap and the actual joint, has gone or has worn away. And therefore, it's sort of almost bone on bone. And when you straighten your leg, it can be agony, especially if you put any weight on it. But the odd thing is, if you start bowling and, you know, your knee warms up and you're not hyperextending it, actually, it can feel fine. The trouble is, it then swells up because of the, you know, the excess sort of stress you're putting through a damaged knee. And also, it's the swelling that's the problem, because it makes it very stiff. It makes it very sore the next day. So that's one of the reasons why Stokes is very careful not to bowl in practice, because he knows it's going to stiffen up the next day. Painkillers, anti-inflammatories, injections and things can help. And that's what he's relying on, I think, when it comes to the Ashes.
Yeah. I mean, if he does bowl in the Ashes, do England actually really want to be playing on flat pitches? They almost want to be playing on flat pitches for their batters, but their bowling attack is more suited to pitches with something in them, isn't it? And, you know, play in tradition, what you consider to be traditional English conditions, yeah, against Australia. But the way they play with their attacking batting, they want to play on flatter pitches so they can smack it. I mean, that's what the One Day side did so well. So there's that balance. Well, a balance to be struck. It seems as if they've made their decision. So it's going to be some quite hard toil for for the bowlers. The other point as well, of course, is about, you know, if you're playing on pitches that do a bit, the games tend to be shorter, so there's more recovery time between the test matches. So, that, you know, anyway, we'll see what pitches they come up with. We'll see how big the boundaries are as well, because, I mean, there has been a suggestion they're going to bring the boundaries in and play quite short boundaries and really sort of get under the nose of the Australians. And, you know, if the Australians are banging it in, they can top edge it for six and, you know, the ball will be flying over the ropes and they'll be able to smack line around as well with shorter boundaries rather than big boundaries. So that, you know, that's going to be fascinating to see. But yeah, you're right about Edgbaston. Edgbaston, I mean, I don't, there are times at Edgbaston where the, you know, it's okay for batting, but it's not often necessary. Well, I mean, I know England did well there last year, didn't they, against India. They chased down that massive score, did really well, but you feel you, as a bowler, you're often in the game at Edgbaston, and sometimes it can get quite dry there and spin as well.
It's a quick scoring ground because a big square, the ball skates across the outfield very fast. There's not much bounce there normally. So, you know, LBWs are a big thing at Edgbaston, nipping the ball back, which obviously the likes of Stuart Broad are very good at. Pat Cummins will probably enjoy it as well, actually. Yeah, I mean, it's a funny pitch. It's a bit sort of capricious as a pitch. It sort of, it goes to sleep and then it seems to liven up for the bowlers a bit and then it goes dead again. And obviously on a nice sunny day, it's pretty flat. It's a funny one. But you generally get kind of scores around 250 to 350, don't you? Kind of throughout the game. It doesn't get much worse or much better. So it's kind of how well you exploit it. I mean, Steve Smith will have great memories of Edgbaston, 200s in that last test there in 2019. England had started out with a leg slip to him and nearly got him out and then gave up on that ploy and used plans B, C, D and E and none of them worked. It's so hard to call at this stage, isn't it? But I think, like you, actually, to have a bit in the pitch would be better for England, really, rather than just playing on total shirt fronts.
Yeah, I mean, that would be my hunch. But anyway, this is what they're going to go with. It seems that's what they're going to go with anyway. So, Yoz, let's assume it is going to be a pretty flat surface at Edgbaston. And the weather forecast, the medium to long-term-ish, if you can be medium to long-term with the weather forecast in this country, seems like, you know, good weather, dry weather leading in to the test match. What is England's attack going to be? What have you come up with?
Well, you know, first test, I like, if you're going to play a four-man attack and hope that Stokes can bowl a bit, I might leave Jack Leach out. My attack would be Anderson, Broad, Robinson, Wood. And I would actually leave Jack Leach out just because I don't think he poses any threat. And I know it's an old-fashioned thing. You've got to have a spinner in the team, and I agree with that in normal circumstances. But you don't want to end up with a bowler who gets panned around the first game, loses confidence. England, you know, lose the test match, and then suddenly they've got to hit back by maybe making a green pitch for the second test at Lords. I just think, I don't know. I think it's difficult, but I think the best four bowlers that they have at the moment are Anderson, Broad, Robinson and Wood. And why not pick those four and hope that Stokes can do a few overs and root as well?
There's a lot of logic in that. There's a lot of logic. If you said to me which four bowlers would you like most to play at Edgbaston, you know, certainly if you're seamers, it would be those four. If you had Robinson, Wood, Anderson and Broad, yeah, definitely. You'd want them in your side. Can they fit them in? Is that the way they're going to go? And that, you know, there's one thing what you want, but also what are your tactics? And it seems to me that Ben Stokes is really quite wedded to the idea of playing Jack Leach, doesn't it? I mean, he bowls him early. He bowls him, you know, a reasonable amount. We did those stats the other day saying he has bowled him a little bit more in test matches than Joe Root did, or he hasn't been quite as successful under Ben Stokes as he was under Joe Root statistically. It's quite close, but, you know, it is there.
I suppose that stat that you came up with, that he averages 34 under Root and 37 under Stokes.
It's roughly that, yeah.
It's revealing, But and I suppose in a way you could say that does that mean that Leach is less effective? Not necessarily, because he's got more attacking fields, he concedes more runs, therefore his wickets are slightly more expensive.
Well, also England scored more runs as well, Yoss, haven't they? They've scored more, they've had more runs to play with as well. So there are other things, you know, you can look at stats and there are other aspects to them, aren't they? So that, you know, you've got, like, for example, in this match, you know, England had stacks of runs on the board, didn't they? So they could, you know, they could bowl Leach with the field up and hopefully, you know, the batters would take a risk and hole out.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to Jack Leach, you know, he didn't have much to work with on this third day pitch. But I always look at how, especially lower order players, handle a spinner. Are they foxed by his length? Does he create mishits? Does he create uncertainty? And he didn't, to me. There was a couple of instances where he held the ball up and it turned a little bit and bounced. But generally speaking, the batters looked, even the lower order players, looked quite comfortable against him. They didn't look as if they were struggling to pick his length or groping occasionally or, you know, miscuing one or getting a leading edge or something like that. And there were no LBW shouts, you know, for sort of mishit sweeps or things like that. So I think in the main, that's just me, the evidence I'm going on is that he just hasn't got quite enough going on with his bowling to pose a problem to top-class players.
Yeah, I mean, there's one caveat today. I mean, he picked up 3 for 35 in the first innings. There's one caveat today that he was off the field for a bit, wasn't he? He went off once and came back, and then he was off the field again for quite a long time. So perhaps he wasn't well. We don't know the full story. As we record this, we're not sure, are we? We're speaking, you know, an hour or so after the game is finished. We're not sure what the full story is there. Why he was off the field, whether it was illness or a bit of injury, whatever. So that may, you know, just taken a bit away from his game today.
So, what's your attack then for Edgbaston?
Well, I would love to have Robinson, Wood, Anderson and Broad in my attack. I think I would. But, you know, if it's going to be dry and if we're going to get 2 weeks of dry weather, I mean, I'd like to look at the pitch, basically, before the game. I want to see. If it's dry, then I think, you know, probably Jack Leach has got to play, hasn't he? If it's dry, you know, going into the match, you think, you know, this might spin. It does sometimes at Edgbaston. It does. They find it quite hard sometimes to keep the water in the square at Edgbaston. So back end of the game, it can spin. But I mean, I'd like to have Robinson, Wood, Anderson, Broad, and Leach in a five man attack. But that ain't going to happen because they can't fit them all in. You can if you play 12, but they can't do that.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On a positive note, I thought Josh Tung bowled well. I thought he looked really good. He kept his speeds up. I thought he bowled that really awkward short of a length when England went to that sort of slightly more bodyline tactic. He didn't waste too many. They were in at the ribs, round about neck sort of height, good pace, good line. He was at the batsman a lot and he kept going really well. But because he was able to bowl that way and also a more orthodox way earlier in the game, I really liked him, actually. I thought he did really well and he deserved his 5 wickets. I would say one little thing, and that is, this is a thing I say almost every time England struggle to take wickets in, say, a third innings of a test match. Where is the variation? Where are the slower balls? Where are the Yorkers? Why don't they try the kind of deliveries that they would bowl a lot in white ball cricket? They never seem to come out in Test cricket. And I think a great way of getting a tail ender out is to bomb him with a through good quick bounces with a few men back on the shot and then chuck in a slower ball. And they're not often on the back foot. They don't pick up the change of pace. They see the ball loop up in the air and think, oh, lovely, I'll have a drive. And they, you know, chip it straight up in the air. I used to do, I know this is a long time ago now, I used to do Wazzy Makram, who was a decent sort of number seven. I used to do him for a pastime. Three bounces, which he sort of had a flap at, and occasionally connected and got a two or something. Then I'd chuck in a slower ball, and his eyes would light up. Oh, lovely, big drive, straight up in the air, gone. And he'd like shake his head and walk off and go, oh, God, you know, what have I done? It was easy. So I don't know why we don't try that a bit more.
That's why you're the analyst inside cricket, Yos. That's why you're the analyst inside cricket.
You know, I even did Beefy like that once. But I don't know. I can't see why these guys don't do it more. Maybe it's just I'm living in the olden days, I suppose. Mm.
So taking wickets on flat pitches, I mean, England have been able to do that. You know, this year they have bowled sides out. Okay, they only needed nine today and they won the test match. You know, it's not like they didn't take wickets today on a flat pitch, and they had loads of runs in the bank. And one of the tactics they use is just going short, isn't it? And hope for the gloves down the leg side. You know, hopefully someone plays a crazy shot. Will Australia succumb to that? Well, I'm sure there'll be a couple of wickets caught down the leg side off the glove in this series, because it looks as though England, you know, they go to that tactic quite quickly, don't they? It's plan A, and then right, yeah, this is not working. Let's go to plan B. So we'll see a bit of that, and you need the likes of Tung, Wood, those sort of bowls with a bit of extra pace to try to make that happen. Really, I know they asked Jimmy to do it, didn't they? In Pakistan, he was asked to do it in one spell. It didn't. I mean, it's not really his game, but it's nice to have that extra pace to do that. What about the England's declaration? Okay, this came on the second day. Yesterday you were chatting away to Stephen Fry about that second day. I don't think England would have declared pulled out 350 ahead if they were playing Australia with more than 2 days left and the weather set fair. I think they, what do you think they would have done? Another 100 runs, something like that? 450 declaration ahead? Ifs and buts, obviously, to get in that position.
Certainly another 100 runs, but I think also what you think about with declarations is the time that you've got left to bowl and keeping your options open for still having a new ball available in the morning. So if you declare with, say, an hour left for play, that's about perfect, because it's a nightmare for the opening batters to come out and bat for 50 minutes. And also you haven't bowled too many overs with the new ball, so it's still hard and fairly new in the morning. So you might have bowled 10, 11 overs. You had just had five overs for each opening bowl to have a quick blast, which is a lovely spell to bowl actually as well. Five overs, you know, the batters can't get away from you too much. They've only got everything to lose. You've got loads to gain as a fast bowler just to bowl those five overs at the end of the day. And then you can come back the following day and there's still a nice bit of shine and hardness for the ball in that early morning spell. So the perfect time to declare is probably about 5:20, which would have given England, another 120 runs.
Yeah, they've been merciless, I think. It also takes a bit of, you know, it really subdues the opposition as well if you can press on. Anyway, we're talking about very, very theoretically. But, of course, England did win this game with over a day to spare. The point being, if this were an Ashes test match and England got into a position where they were in such a powerful position, just keep going and don't pull out. Which brings us to Australia, and they are playing the World Test Championship final coming up. You know, we're talking about England's selection issues, and Australia have got some, you know, issues as well. They've got some, you know, real positives, and they've got that balancer in Cameron Green, although he did take a bad blow
he was hit on the head
during the IPL.
And he is he's a really key man for Australia. They don't often have a genuine all-rounder, actually, in their ranks. So often, in the olden days, they've gone with four bowlers and somebody who can bowl a few dibbly-dobblies, or something like Steve Waugh or a Mark Waugh, who can bowl a few spinners, or Alan Border, even, for going further back, bowling a few spinners. But they tend to go with the four-bowling attack. But now they can go with five, with Cameron Green as a genuine frontline bowler, but also bats at six. The one thing about him is he's been found out by the short ball quite a bit. And it's not unusual for a tall player, very, very very tall player, to be exposed by short pitch bowling. And he's been hit a few times, and he was hit in the IPL as well, but he was definitely hit. The Indians, and when we get to the World Test Championship next week, I bet you the Indians will target him when he comes into bat. He'll be peppered with short pitch bowling because he doesn't seem to pick it up that well. So that's a potential weakness which England will hope to exploit themselves if they've got the right bowling attack.
Yeah. But what they have got, of course, as well, though, is they've got Nathan Lyon, who feels like a banker spin. And how England play Lyon, I think, will go a long way to deciding how the Ashes go, how successful England can be in the Ashes series. And the other thing as well, of course, is Josh Hazlewood. You know, we talked about, you know, England's players coming back from injury, you know, the likes of Robinson and Anderson. You know, what's the situation with Ben Stokes? But Australia, yeah, they've got this extra test match, you know, a really intense test match to play, haven't they? It's the World Test Championship final. You know, it's a marquee game. So they've got six tests back to back, you know, in coming up. And they've got to try and manage their resources as well. And Hazlewood's barely bowled. Cummins, they're talking about, you know, Pat Cummins is talking about playing all six test matches, you know, which will put a big strain on him as the captain. So there's so many intriguing plot lines to follow. Even just about selection to start with and fitness, what's going to be the balance?
Yes. And of course, they're batting as well. David Warner, we heard today, has announced that he wants to retire next winter in Australia, their summer. So he's thinking, he's hoping that he's going to get through these next six test matches, still be in the side and obviously play the first bit of the Australian summer. Well, we'll see, won't we, how he gets on. I guess he'll probably get the nod for the first test, the World Test Championship, see how he goes. But Broad is licking his lips, so waiting to see him at Edgbaston, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, and that's why... Is that one of the reasons why Broad has to play? I mean, do you have to play a player for one player?
Listen, Justin Langer, who I will play an interview with before the first test, I interviewed him for this Legends of the Ashes podcast series I've done, and he said, look, we were amazed when England didn't pick Anderson and Broad for that first test match in Brisbane, the last Ashes. He couldn't believe it. Thought it was insane, and sure enough, you know, Australia, David Warner loved it, didn't he? So England got that horribly wrong. They lost the psychological war instantly by not picking Broad to play against Warner, who he had on toast for the whole of the previous series. So England must sort of take the sensible option there. And put Broad. Broad is, for me, he's almost number one on the team sheet for if Warner's picked for Australia, that is. Because I suppose England won't necessarily know until... It depends if the teams are announced before the toss or not. It may be that, you know, they exchange the team sheets at the actual toss and perhaps Warner gets left out. Who knows?
It's quite an interesting decision to say, I'm going to retire from Test cricket if I can make it that far at the end of the Pakistan series, isn't it? I mean, once you start to talk publicly about retirement, I just wonder how that sort of feeds into your play. Perhaps it actually releases you. Perhaps it takes some pressure off you. I don't know. That's my intention. If I get there, I get there. If I don't, I don't. You know, let's just give it a go. I suppose it can work both ways. Sometimes you start to talk and think about retirement, you're almost already there, although it didn't hinder Alistair Cook very much, didn't it? His last test match seemed to free him up. You know, he got 100 in his last test match.
It's nice to have the choice, isn't it? It's nice to have the option to be able to sort of plan your retirement programme, really, assuming that the selectors see it the same way, I suppose. I mean, you know, Marcus Harris is also in the frame to open the batting for Australia in that first test match in the World Test Championship. It'd be very interesting to see. I guess, I mean, Warner's saying he's hitting the ball superbly in the nets. We'll see when the time comes. So that's going to be our next podcast, by the way, looking back at the first day's play from the Oval in the World Test Championship final next Wednesday. Just a final thought for today. Ben Stokes, winning captain, didn't bat or bowl. Fresh air game for the captain.
Yeah, well, it's a bit like those IPL matches, isn't it? Where you just get to bat and you don't field. You know, you get impact subbed off
I mean, it does sort of introduce the question, of course, how important is the captain? And there was always that debate going on when Mike Brearley was captain of England, whose batting average was in the early 20s, the low 20s, and he went up and down the order. He opened for a while, then he was down at number six, and in that iconic 1981 series, he went, I think, up and down the order a bit in that series as well. But he you know, nobody sort of queried his presence, even though he only averaged 20 over his test career and didn't bowl because of his prowess as a captain. I mean, Stokes, I'm not suggesting that Stokes doesn't deserve his place as a batter at the moment. Of course he does. But, you know, how much impact will he have with bat or ball? He'll probably bat at number six. I don't think he's going to do that thing which everybody says, oh, we might open the batting to create another option, another bowling option. I think that would be sacrificial for him to open the batting. And anyway, Zach Crawley has made runs in this test match, so I'm sure he's going to get the nod. But, you know, Stokes could finish up in the Ashes kind of making cameos and not bowling much, and England could win the series. So he could be captain fantastic without many stats to back him up.
Yeah. Well, a few months ago, when the issue, you know, the case of the Ben Stokes knee, and one of the things I was talking to someone in the England camp, and I said, well, look, if the knee is such a problem, why doesn't he just get it sorted out? You know, you've got the rest of your life to live. You don't want to damage it and put it through things it can't cope with. You know, why not just bite the bullet, you know, whatever, have the operation? And that person said, well, he's so important to us as our leader. So that's where he's got to. And that's how the England players see him. So in a short space of time, in a year, you know, his status as just a leader is it's gone sort of skyrocketing. He's a bit like El Cid. Have you ever watched that film?
Yeah.
El Cid, where he actually he's a Spanish leader from the 12th century, isn't he? And he actually dies, and they strap him to the horse, and he goes out in front of the troops, and it inspires the troops, and they defeat the enemy. I mean, there's a bit of the El Cid there. Well, let's hope not. Let's hope he's fit and you know, we can stop talking about his damn knee, because it's quite boring. In a way, it's quite boring, isn't it? You hope he's fit, actually, he's able to bowl. Everyone's fit. You hope Hazelwood's fit. You hope that, you know, everyone gets on the park, and it's about the players, you know, the fit players playing well, and then see what happens, really, rather than, you know, teams being denuded of key players because of the wear and tear of international cricket.
Well, all will be revealed. In the meantime, England are going to luxuriate on the golf course for the next few days, keeping one eye on the World Test Championship final from the Oval. And as I said before, that will be our next engagement. The Wednesday of that first day, we'll be reporting back from the outcome of the events at that match. So we'll speak to you then. And don't forget, as I mentioned last time, our sister podcast, Storylines, with Melissa Story and Nikki Chowdhury, a very interesting last episode of that, about a woman who lost her professional contract and how she's been dealing with that since. So check that one out, actually. In the meantime, we'll be back next Wednesday. Look forward to it. See you then.
Yeah, really looking forward to the World Test Championship final. Thanks for listening. Goodbye for now.
Podcast Network.